Shoes.
What's the matter, Morty?
Coral. The Sphinx.
Can't you buy our whole dress?
Coral. The Sphinx.
Great gowns.
Coral.
Beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Coral.
No, it hasn't.
Hello, my name is Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to another episode of the Every Outfit Podcast. And we're back, baby.
We're back, and we're coming to you from Lauren's sick Airbnb. What is this place?
The Airbnb is giving Airbnb. There's a sign behind us that says, work hard and be nice to people. Have we run out of phrases? I mean, I would go for a, like, but first Pinot Grigio or something.
See, you can tell when you're in an Airbnb because while you may see wood or marble, it's never wood or marble. Everything is like the same material somehow, but it looks different.
Can I tell you, Chelsea, the thing that gets me the most is the lighting. The lighting does not fuck. And beyond the fact that it doesn't fuck, every light we turn on is a different color temperature.
Okay, that's a real first world problem.
I think we're going to be lighting anarchists and just replace all the bulbs with nice LED warm light.
Do what you need to do. You're in here for a while, right?
We are in here for a minute. So I moved this week, which they say is the worst experience ever.
Who says that?
No, isn't it on the list of most stressful experiences? It's like getting fired, death, money problems, moving.
I think divorce is also in there, but sure.
Yeah.
But sure. Moving isn't fun. It's never fun.
We are here for the next couple of months, and then finally we'll be in our home and never moving again.
You say that, but you never know.
How are you, Chelsea?
Good. Same old, same old. I saw Madonna last week, which was very special. Haven't seen this woman perform live since the Bush administration, literally.
Wow. And how late did she come on stage?
She was just 2 hours late.
Okay, that seems to be the go-to star time. So do you get there later?
I did get there later, but I hung out for like an hour and a half. I had a lot of friends that happened to be there on the same night, so that was cute. And we literally sat next to our friends Jess and Maya, which is crazy because think about the Kia Forum and how many seats are in there. What are the odds statistically?
It was meant to be.
Clearly. She was amazing. I think my favorite part was the erotica section where she did this whole dance number in a boxing ring.
Okay, so take me through it because it is her, well, I don't want to denigrate Madonna by being like, it's her Eras Tour.
It's literally her Eras Tour and it's in chronological order, unlike the Eras Tour. She starts in the Burning Up era and ends in the Bitch I'm Madonna era.
So the show gets progressively weaker as it goes on.
No. You know what? I'm not a huge fan of the song Bitch I'm Madonna, but I actually thought the performance was great because all the dancers came out dressed as Madonna in her different eras. And it included some pretty esoteric outfits, like the little Bo Peep outfit that she wore to the party for the sex book.
Right.
Or like the pinstripe Gautier jumpsuit that she wore, you know, the one where her tits were out at the fashion show. So things like that were really fun. There was a lot of attention to detail. Yeah, I just wish I hadn't been on my period for the Live to Tell AIDS memorial part. That was quite, yeah, that was quite moving. It was very cool and generous and beautiful that she did it. It was upsetting, of course. And what else happened? Oh, Kylie Minogue was there. I went to the Kylie Minogue show.
Well, Kylie Minogue was at the Madonna show, right? And then she had her own show the next day.
In Vegas, yes. And it's funny because I went with a group of Australians that were seeing Kylie that next day. So they obviously freaked out. I mean, for Australians, Kylie Minogue is Madonna. Not to denigrate Kylie in any way.
And the visual gag was that Kylie Minogue came out in a studded Madonna shirt because Madonna had worn a studded Kylie Minogue shirt in the 2000s.
Yes, it was very, very sweet. They sang I Will Survive. And then they did a little bit of I Just Can't Get You Out of My Head, which was very cute, like a cappella with the audience.
Amazing.
Very wholesome.
I've missed basically everything the last 2 weeks because on top of moving, I've had an insane cough for 2 weeks. We almost did this episode remotely just to be safe, but I think I'm out of the woods. Although I went to my doctor and he was like, oh yeah, this is what people are calling the month-long cough. I'm like, please don't say that to me. No.
Don't say that to me. I hope I don't get it from you while I'm sitting here. We tried to record remotely, but it didn't work out. And then Lauren had a mental breakdown. And guys, You don't want to know what Lauren's energy is like when there are technical difficulties. It is spooky.
Yes. We attempted to do this episode remotely. I had a whole bit that I was going to do, and then my internet crapped out at this place. I was going to come to you, but it seemed like someone was moving and your dog was going crazy, so you headed over here, and Paul turned one of the bedrooms into a recording studio. He's tipped a mattress over to suck up all of the hollow sound from these laminate wood floors. And here we are.
We did it, Joe. And speaking of which, now I think we should get into what everyone wants us to talk about, which is the State of the Union address. Just kidding, guys. I am, of course, talking about the Oscars.
Which I almost missed because I was packing up my other house. I just sort of had it on. And then as we were moving into the Airbnb, Paul had it on his phone as I was driving over. It's like, this is a work day for me, okay? You don't understand.
That's fucked up.
Thoughts, Chelsea?
I thought it was an entertaining ceremony overall. I certainly had more invested in a lot of the categories than most Oscars or Oscars of recent years, for sure.
Because you've seen most of the films. Not like you knew anyone who was nominated.
Yeah, no, of course I did not know anyone that was nominated, but I had people to root for, which right. was exciting. But what did you think about Jimmy Kimmel? Because I feel like he kind of slayed, although I can't remember any of his jokes.
Yeah, I really thought out of all the years he's hosted, and this is the fourth year that he's hosted, this might have been the weakest, but I think the Oscars have become a really tough gig because now there are so many award shows that are not only televised, but dissected through multiple forms of media. By the time you get to the Oscars, like, all the good jokes are done. Like, what else are you going to say about Maestro?
True. I don't know. He had some good ones. And, you know, the dog from Anatomy of a Fall had a couple of good moments, I thought.
Whatever PR strategy is going on with Messi from Anatomy of a Fall, because all I saw on Twitter in the days before was, like, you know, a lot of studios after the Academy luncheon called the Academy because they were very upset that Messi was stealing focus at the luncheon. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then it was like, Messi will be at the Academy Awards. And then he was the main attraction there. So I'm like, was this a fake scandal to get us intrigued about the Oscars?
I wonder. But while Desi is cute, you can't make the argument that he didn't deserve to be there because he is a very good animal actor. Like, this dog faked an overdose, for God's sake. I don't even know how you do that.
Did you see Sandra Hüller on the red carpet? Because I think my favorite genre is I don't give a fuck European actresses who are forced to do the American press circuit, because they were all like, I think it was a clip of Billy Bush of all people being like, what's going on with Messi? Have you talked to him since? And she's like, I do not know. He's not my dog.
I fucking love her.
Yeah, so I did not care for Jimmy Kimmel. Again, I don't fault him because what jokes are there left to make, which might explain why he did not one, not two, but three Robert Downey Jr. drug jokes in a row during the monologue.
I know, it's true. Like, how many years is this poor man who is a recovering addict among many other things? Like, he is a very good actor, so good that he, in fact, won an Oscar. And it's still, like, the first thing that people go to when they talk about him, which I do think is unfortunate. I agree with you. I thought that was a little much.
Is it the first thing that people think about? Because I feel like most people now know him from the Marvel films as Tony Stark, that it's, like, in a way, like, his last arrest was in 2001. He's had almost more years in this industry as a sober person than as that drug addict persona that dominated the headlines, certainly in the 90s when we were growing up.
That was a really long time ago. But it's also, it's just not new material, because every time Robert Downey Jr. is at an award show, he is at the receiving end of these kinds of jokes.
And there are so many better jokes you can make about him, like the fact that he wears Ron DeSantis-esque boot heels on the red carpet.
He's rocking a Cuban heel. I didn't even notice.
To get on my nerd shit, but this is relevant to this fashion conversation. This started when he was shooting the Iron Man films because he was against Gwyneth Paltrow. And so to be as tall or taller than her, he would wear these Cuban heels, which I had assumed, like his Tony Stark persona, had died with the movies. And color me shocked that I'm like, God damn it, he's doing it again on the red carpet.
Why not? He looks hot. He looks good. And most importantly, he thanked his stylist and his entertainment lawyer during his acceptance speech, which is so refreshing. Also, I don't know if you noticed, an entertainment lawyer got a shout out in the in memoriam section this year, which I feel like is progress, because there's just too many people in the industry that just are never rewarded at the Oscars ever, like stylists, like casting directors, although that's about to change.
Actually, that was one of the funnier jokes where it's like, and we're going to award casting, but don't worry, not this year, 2 years from now. I kind of found Robert Downey Jr.'s speech a little lacking. There are things I liked about the award show, but only because he knew he was going to win. He knows that this is going to go in his proverbial highlight reel. And I'm just a little surprised he didn't prepare more. Like,
he prepared. He had material. He definitely prepared. You can tell when someone is genuinely shocked and when someone is doing a bit, and I think he was doing a bit, although I think the bit was good. It was sweet what he said about his wife,
that he called her a vet, his vet,
whatever. I was into it.
Well, I'm waiting for him to finally just be like, and my mommy wife. And look, some men need mommy wives, nothing against that. This woman, like Robert Downey Jr.'s entertainment lawyer, has been with him through a lot.
Of course. Shall we talk about some other good wins?
Certainly the person who seemed most shocked to have won herself would be Emma Stone.
Slay, like she deserved it.
In our group chat with Jessica Glasscock, she's like, I've not seen Poor Things. Is this for me? And we were like, one, yes it is, but two.
Yes, it definitely is. Jesus.
Look.
And now it's on Hulu. Everyone can watch it.
And I think it's in Europe, it's on Disney Plus, because they are all owned under the same banner, which is so funny to me. Look, does Emma Stone need two Oscars? No. Should she have won for Poor Things over La La Land? Absolutely yes.
Yeah, it's true. Two things can be true.
And it was a tight race between Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone. Lily Gladstone won the SAG Award. Emma Stone had won the BAFTA. And I think these are the hardest kinds of Oscar losses, where it really is a 50-50 chance if you'll win. And guys, I know there are five nominees, so technically it's a 20% chance of winning. But there are always like three people nominated who you know are just not going to win. And I think that's the fun place to be.
The Annette Bening place to be.
That's a bitch who's like, it should be me. But I feel like a Carrie Mulligan or a Sterling K. Brown, like they had a ball that night. Like, I'm not winning. I don't need to get on stage. I can get fucked up. Like, let's go.
True. I also really loved that Poor Things won for costume design.
I think you would have rioted if it didn't.
And I love that Holly Waddington wore a mutton sleeve to the ceremony like a fucking champ. It's just like, it's so rare for someone new to break into this category that I really appreciate that. And also, we got a DM from a fuckette that said that based on our previous discussion of the Oscar nominees, she bet money on her winning an Oscar in costume design. So congrats to that fuckette. I wonder how much they won.
Amazing. Well, again, can you award art? We seemingly do, especially in this industry. But I think people were surprised that Barbie didn't win a lot of the creative categories. But there is this thing where sometimes a movie is in the award and Oscar discussion race for so long. Like, there are movies that come out in the summertime or certainly in the fall, like Killers of the Flower Moon. I got it right, right?
Okay. I think so.
That sometimes there are movies like Poor Things that come out over the holidays that end up overtaking the award discussion.
Yeah, of course. And that definitely happened with Poor Things. Also, love to see Justine Triet win for screenplay, along with her husband, her very chic, well-dressed husband. I think that was one of the better suits that we saw at the Oscars.
Absolutely. And original screenplay is usually where the Academy feels most comfortable awarding female directors. Like, I think about Sofia Coppola and Greta Gerwig. They're like, we still want to give white men director Oscars. So, like, will you take original screenplay?
Whatever. She took it like a champ. Her look was kind of giving We Come to This Place for magic, but I was into it. And I was also into the fact that they played the steel drum PIMP when she ascended the stage.
Did you see she was on the red carpet and someone was asking about that choice? And she was like, you know that in Europe, like, we don't know what the lyrics are to this song, right?
I've never really thought about that, but love that. Jonathan Glazer won. Our boy, good for him.
Yes, he was one of the only winners to acknowledge the Israel-Hamas war.
He was immediately misquoted yes. by pretty much everyone and dragged, which was fucked up.
So I felt like given the fact that you basically have to make these speeches in 45 seconds, that it was as nuanced as it could be for those that missed it. He said, our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness. And that's where Variety put the period. But actually, he goes on. And the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all the victims of this dehumanization, how do we resist?
Yeah, and basically what was picked up was that he was refuting his Jewishness full stop, when really he was like, I'm refuting that my Jewishness and the Holocaust are be using to justify this genocide, essentially. And good for him.
And there was protest outside of the Dolby Theater, which forced people to have to get out of their cars and walk amongst the protests, which is very cool to see. Yeah, that's about as good as you're going to get at a Hollywood ceremony.
Yeah. That part where Sean Lennon wished Yoko a happy Mother's Day, that was also the same time that I realized that he still has that same girlfriend.
Charlotte Kemp Mule, of course.
I didn't realize that she had become such a suicide girl, because the last time I checked in with her was that tail end of Indie Sleaze where like women were wearing boater hats like at the very back of their head. But now she's like full suicide girl distillers energy.
There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multi-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. I personally have fallen out of love with a 20-step skincare routine. I'll leave that for the preteens. Honestly, I've realized the less complicated, the better. OneSkin really is science-backed skincare. They combine tissue engineering, data analysis, and cutting-edge longevity science to create the world's most effective product to target skin aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS-01 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. And they've got several studies to back it up. Also, their packaging is so minimal and chic. I'm in love. I've been using their cleanser as well as their OS-01 face topical supplement for a minute now. And honestly, I've been leaning on it heavily on this tour. It has kept my skin plump and glowing when really, I'm just haggard and very tired. But don't just take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code OUTFIT at oneskin.co. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code OUTFIT. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. You've heard me talk about my love of Quince before, how they transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Are you like me, and now that the temperatures are getting warmer, you're looking to upgrade your summer wardrobe? Perhaps with a premium European linen dress, blouse, and short, or maybe a washable silk top? Personally, I've had my eye on this linen scoop neck midi dress in black gingham. With Quince, the dress is a fraction of the cost it would be anywhere else. How do they do this, you may ask? Well, Quince pairs directly with top factories. They cut out the cost of the middleman and pass the savings on to all of us. Honestly, there's so much good stuff in their new linen collection. There's also this linen strapless top that's giving season 2 carry vibes. A must get, in my opinion. There's also a pajama set that's giving the perfect spring work from home vibes, if your work is being a degenerate podcaster like me. Wow, this is just turning into my own personal wish list from Quince. Best yet, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. Quince has it all. Clothing, home goods, jewelry that are timeless at an unbeatable price. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/outfit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/outfit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/outfit.
Another thing I'd love to discuss is the choice to have former winners introduce the nominees in the acting categories.
I love it. I get that some of the pairings are a little awkward and it kind of feels like, you know, when you're in elementary school and you're randomly assigned a partner for an activity.
The ideal scenario is to have someone talking about someone they know, but they've added this extra thing where they also have to have won an Oscar in that category. So like for Sam Rockwell, who actually knows Robert Downey Jr. and happened to have won for Best Supporting Actor, it works. But then you have like Nicolas Cage, who clearly doesn't know Paul Giamatti, who's basically like, fuck, man, I wish I had worn a lazy eye.
But he was great, though.
He was amazing.
He was great. Matthew McConaughey was great also. I loved seeing Sally Field talk about Emma Stone. Like, these are the kind of random pairings that I live for, because we're all into that variety actors on actors yes. vibe, where they just think of some freakish combination of people.
Chelsea, would you be shocked to know that Sally Field and Emma Stone actually know each other, because Sally Field was in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man that Emma Stone was in?
Oh, God. I hate that you know that. No, I don't. I love that you know that.
But for me, my social anxiety couldn't handle the etiquette of getting on stage, because it's like, do you say hi to everyone? Do you say hi to the person who talked about you? Do you say hi to the person who has the award? Because sometimes that wasn't the same person. I don't know. It's a matter of opinion, but my opinion is I like seeing clips of the nominees.
Well, we should also say the way they announced Best Picture was highly unusual as well.
I'm going to be full ages. I don't give a shit. Stop letting octogenarians announce Best Picture.
Okay, but in Al Pacino's defense, he said that they didn't ask him to read out all the nominees.
He said that backstage they were like, we gotta end this show, so just announce the winner.
Yeah, so it's not even really on him, although I do think it's fucked up, because like the producers' names should be read. You know, like I was excited that Christine Vachon got nominated for her first Oscar for Past Lives. She's produced like every movie that we love.
Oh, that's crazy.
And this bitch doesn't even get her name read by Al Pacino. Like it doesn't cut, like her friends at home watching don't see her. Like it's fucked up.
He didn't say the winner is Oppenheimer. He was like, uh-oh, I see Oppenheimer.
And we were like, should we take him at his word? Like,
and Al Pacino was in the not seen enough Christopher Nolan film Insomnia. So they know each other, and he knows Christopher Nolan's producer, who's his wife Emma. So that was, I guess, a reunion of sorts.
And she looked great. She had a great Rodarte gown. I loved that. Also, I have to know what you thought about the twins reunion.
Well, I'm going to give a very nerd answer. I loved it, but I just want to know that Michael Keaton wasn't Batman when Arnold Schwarzenegger was Mr. Freeze, but it's fine.
But wait, Danny DeVito was the Penguin.
Yes.
Okay, just getting the timeline straight on all of this.
But all of those Batmans, I believe, are in the same canon timeline.
Right, right.
Wow, I can't believe you didn't make fun of me. You just rolled with it. You're like, you know what? Yeah, sure.
When Twins came out, it was jarring to see Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger stand next to each other, but now especially.
It's weird.
It's even more extreme, because Danny DeVito has gotten shorter.
As happens, our nose gets bigger, our ears keep growing, and yeah, we get shorter.
And I think Arnold Schwarzenegger might have gotten bigger also. It looked crazy. It looked insane. It looked like Arnold could just pick him up and rock him like a sweet little baby.
Well, give it a few more years. They'll come back and probably do that as a bit.
Genius pairing of presenters. I felt the same way about Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt.
He could have chemistry with a wall, it seems.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying Emily Blunt wasn't giving. She's also
was definitely giving. They were giving. That was giving.
I would love to know what you thought about John Cena's naked bit for the costume design.
I feel like with costume design, there's always room to do something really comedic. And I think that landed.
And I think it's been a few years since we had a kind of go-to person who's game to do those bits. Like I think about Ben Stiller when he was in the Navi makeup for Avatar and makeup award. And he was like, this was a terrible decision. Why did I do this?
Yeah, that was great.
Shall we get into the red carpet, which is always a great bit to do in the audio format of a podcast?
Of course. Well, who were your best dressed? You go first.
I'm going to say Jennifer Lawrence in Dior. And maybe it's the illness talking, but I really did enjoy this look. You rarely see a polka dot on the Oscar red carpet, and I was here for it.
It is one of the more timeless looks. Like, I think that when we look back at this Oscars, this won't be glaringly from 2004. Yeah.
2024.
Guys, my head, it's not right. It's whatever's happening up here.
To be fair, her look could be in the 2004 Oscars. It would have worked just as well.
It would have. Okay, what else?
I mean, of course, Greta Lee and right off the runway, Lueve.
See, my favorite Lueve moment was Andrea Riceboro. How do we say her name?
I believe it's Riceboro, but we can't. Guys, you're not coming here for our pronunciations. And no. Boy, do you love sliding into our DMs and our Patreon comments to be like, stop saying it this way.
Just accept that we're two Moira Roses that have found each other. But I thought that she looked so cool, like an individual, so modern. No old Hollywood drag, no hint of old Hollywood drag. Although I think my favorite look actually this year literally was old Hollywood drag, which would be Carrie Mulligan in Balenciaga.
I was really into this as well. She's wearing Balenciaga. I saw a photo where she's eyeing Yorgos Lanthimos. I'm like, yes, get into your weird girl era.
I know, because it didn't look like drag. And that also speaks to like what's happening with hair and makeup and stuff. Because we're used to seeing these people in these over-the-top 50s-inspired satin, princess, mermaid gowns. And then they have the full contour and the highlights and the blowout. And it all looks really cheesy and like shitty. But this looked just so beautiful, so classic. And also, I think it benefited from a lack of accessorizing. Like, jewelry could have really unraveled this. Makeup could have unraveled this. But all the elements came together.
And her hair is very what you've got going on, just blonde and a bob, and she let her natural texture, which I think also modernizes it instead of trying to do an updo.
Yeah, but there's also a story to it because it's a recreation of a Cristobal Balenciaga gown that debuted like during the same time period as her character from Maestro would have been marrying Leonard Bernstein. There's storytelling. And who would have thought that she would have outdressed Margot Robbie at the Oscars?
She's tired. And I'm okay with that.
If you are going to go as hard as you've been going, you might as well go the hardest at the Oscars and then just be done with it.
But also, if you know you're not going to win, I more saw that as a stylistic hard reset where it's like Barbie's over. Like,
it's not over, though. You're literally still doing events for it. I get that maybe she wanted to let America have a moment because yes. America was actually nominated. And we saw the sort of reversal. I saw a TikTok about this. I don't know who did it. Sorry to this creator, but someone was basically making the point that throughout this entire press tour for Barbie, Margot's been in pink, America's been in mostly black or darker colors, and this was kind of the reversal of that, and it does seem intentional.
All right, I have a menswear pick, which might be shocking, which is Bradley Cooper in Vuitton. I sort of was into this double-breasted turquoise button, kind of flared pants. I don't know what's going on. No tie. Mom as a date. I was taken with it.
Mom as a date is very cute. I think it's great that Louis Vuitton didn't make him look like a lesbian magician like they did to Barry Keoghan at the Golden Globes. But I don't know if I support no tie. I don't think I can support no tie. Ryan Gosling also did no tie. Not that I'm the biggest stickler for tradition. I love when people break the rules. But when people wear like cocktail attire to the Oscars, I think that's wrong.
Unless you're doing something like Timothée and you're just getting like Ader Ackerman like tits out in a vest, like we're showing full back. You got to do something if we're not going to wear a tie.
I think Ryan Gosling was trying to do that a little bit, but I don't know how successful it actually was. That said, I love him. And we somehow didn't mention the performance of I'm Just Ken, which I think was the highlight for everyone.
Yes, but it was shot in a way, which is understandable. You want to focus on Ryan Gosling and the crowd, but it wasn't until the very end that it's like, oh, all the actual Kens that are in the movie sequence are on stage.
Yeah, I didn't realize that for a moment either, but I thought it was very fun. His voice was great. I loved the bit with Slash. that was unexpected. That added a little bit of je ne sais quoi to the whole thing. You know, I love the Gentlemen Prefer Blondes reference, of course.
And do you have any other best dress?
My last best dress is Sandra Hüller in Schiaparelli. Shout out to my friend Jordan Johnson, who has been dressing her so impeccably throughout the award season. But I feel like that was a really special look. I feel like all the best looks were black when you think about it. I also really liked Rita Moreno in that black Dolce & Gabbana doing her best Cheetah Rivera drag. I thought that was really special too. Oh, and Michelle Yeoh and Balenciaga, love her also.
Yeah, I feel like the focus is a lot on Kim being a Balenciaga ambassador, but like Demna really does love a woman of a certain age.
And that dress that she wore was apparently made from like three different gowns that he just bought off of eBay. It's very cool to see with Michelle Yeoh and Carey Mulligan, the two opposite sides of the Balenciaga spectrum.
There are some looks I would love to discuss that are neither the worst dress nor, they're certainly not my favorites of the evening. But first off, I think we do need to discuss the fact that Florence Pugh and Emily Blunt were essentially wearing the same dress.
Yeah, that was awkward when they had to get on stage together. And it's like, oh, both of their shoulder straps are eerily suspended above their shoulders.
So Emily Blunt is wearing Schiaparelli from the Couture collection in January, I believe. Florence Pugh is wearing a label called Delcor.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this particular shoulder, if this originated at Schiaparelli or if there's an archival reference that both of these designers are copying, reinterpreting, whatever you want to call it. But I would just like to know. Although I do think that, especially as I was looking through fashion shows this season, the influence that Schiaparelli is having on other designers is truly tragic and sad. No, it really is. It really is.
It's an epidemic.
It's an epidemic. I wish it would stop.
Speaking of, I wish it would stop. No, I just need to transition. But Billie Eilish and Chanel, which when we were discussing it in our group chat, I believe Jessica said it was giving Blair Waldorf. But I felt like her look was more giving the uniforms at the end of Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, for me, I didn't hate, but I didn't love. I like that the way that she dresses is so anti-establishment, or as anti-establishment as you can be if you're wearing Chanel. But not my favorite. I think her Vanity Fair outfit was better, personally, which was just an oversized suit.
Which is what we always talk about, is usually the Vanity Fair look should be the Oscar red carpet look.
I already feel like I'm being terrorized by this Wicked press tour, and it's only beginning now. Love Ariana and Cynthia Erivo, but I feel like they both looked like they were in full costumes.
Chell, I got real bad news for you, because if you think Wicked is coming out this summer and they're starting the promo this spring, the movie's not coming out till November 27th.
Oh, God. Is that it? Yeah, I kind of don't have any other thoughts on fashion.
Same.
Okay, fuck it. Let's move on. So Jonathan Van Ness is a monster.
I think the biggest bummer of not recording last week for you was the fact that we had to wait a week to talk about this. Yeah, for those who don't know, Rolling Stone, which is now a only digital entity, right?
Yeah, which is clearly doing some amazing investigative journalism between this and the Idol expose, but anyway.
And last week they released an article by Cheyenne Roundtree that says, "They play nice inside the tensions and tumult at Queer Eye." I love the word tumult, not used enough, in which it gives a bit of insight into why Bobby left somewhat abruptly last November. And I think what has been picked up the most is an unnamed source, or multiple sources.
Multiple sources.
Three more sources who worked with the reality star described Van Ness as emotionally, quote, abusive and having rage issues, which is a highly specific descriptor. Like, there's being a diva, there's being hard to work with, but rage issues? Who is he, me, while driving in Los Angeles traffic?
I know. Also, can you imagine like Jonathan Van Ness wearing a flower crown and a caftan, like screaming at you? Like, crazy. Yeah, there were seven people that worked on Queer Eye that referred to him in this way. Monster, nightmare, what have you. And they also said that other members of the Queer Eye cast then didn't want to shoot with Jonathan Van Ness, including Bobby, of course, who has always seemed like the most sane person there, even though he gets the least amount of screen time.
Well, but that was always the joke since the beginning of the show, is Anthony's making a margarita and like Bobby is doing a full house renovation.
Well, Karamo's also has a very low lift. Like at least they Jonathan
all do.
At least Jonathan has to do someone's hair. Tan has more work, but Karamo and Anthony literally do nothing.
This is a complete aside, but I don't know if you've been terrorized in your YouTube recommendations for the seemingly 11-part Architectural Digest series of Tan France's house. I'm like, I already watched that video and I didn't finish it. And it's like, oh no, no, now here's a tour of Tan's tennis courts. Chelsea, he moved to Salt Lake City to build a like Victorian looking home from scratch.
Okay, at least that's kind of, I don't want to say original, but it's a little out of sync with the way that most gay male celebrities design their houses in this day and age. Like, we've seen Ryan Murphy's house. We've seen, you know, we know how these places usually look.
You go.
I just want to say, I like Tan France as a person. I question him as a fashion expert. I enjoy watching the show Queer Eye. I think Bobby's my favorite. Anthony always freaks me out. Anthony to me is a little bit Patrick Bateman. Like there's a little bit of like nothing behind the eyes. Like it's a bit spooky. Jonathan Van Ness. Yeah, it's not crazy to think that they are a bit of an Ellen DeGeneres type.
Having a nice persona never works. I'm talking about a nice public persona. If your public persona is being nice in an entertainment sphere, 100% of the time, you are not. Like, the only way to survive the public eye is to have a public persona of being a cold, aloof bitch, and then private sources reveal you're actually quite nice and warm.
Yeah, it should be the reverse of this. But I love Bobby, and I'm sad that he's leaving. And I'm not someone that watches Queer Eye religiously, but I've definitely seen at least a couple of episodes of every single season.
That is my favorite quote from this article, which is a different production source who says, "My queer friends aren't necessarily lining up to watch it, but it's a show that a Southern mom with a gay child who's kind of on the fence about whether to accept him would watch and be affected by."
Considering the fact that this article is basically saying that none of them are friends, this article says the only people that are friends are Anthony and Tan. They are all doing incredible acting.
Anthony and Tan are the ones that are friends?
Anthony and Tan are the only friends, and they also, this article also says that they conspired together to get Bobby replaced with their friend Jeremiah Brent, who is, I assume, an interior decorator. And they succeeded. Oh. And so that is who is going to be replacing him.
Did you ever watch the Rachel Zoe reality show?
Yeah, what, the Rachel Zoe project?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's where Jeremiah Brent comes in. He's after Brad.
Wait, you were watching that show post Brad?
I did. I watched the Jeremiah Brent years.
My friend Jordan, who I just mentioned, also on the Rachel Zoe project, another famous Rachel Zoe alum.
This is when Rachel had a kid and Jeremiah comes on the show and it's like, yeah, I'm your styling assistant, but I'm more into interior design. And then he like decorates their home and he was gone after a season. And then I never heard from him again. Not that we know each other. And then it's like, then I look in Architectural Digest and he's married to Nate Berkus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I was trying to think of other like gay man houses that look like that, that have been in Architectural Digest. And I was thinking of that, although I couldn't put my finger on it. But thank you for that. I appreciate that. My favorite part of this article was, this is truly the shadiest paragraph I've ever read in my life. There's basically a part of this article where they just talk about how unsuccessful all of their other business ventures are that is so rude. This person writes, "France's Next in Fashion competition show with co-host Gigi Hadid stalled after two seasons at Netflix. Vanessa's popular podcast Getting Curious was refitted into a docuseries on Netflix, which has gone dark after one season. The main backer for their JVN hair care line went bankrupt." This is really rude. "Karamo's syndicated talk show brings in around 600,000 viewers, and YouTube episodes fluctuate between 150 and 500K views on average."
What?
However,
that's not bad.
"However, his little-known skincare brand Mantle has fewer than 10,000 followers on Instagram."
Okay. What did Karamo do to this guy?
I know. "And Anthony, who recently announced his new docuseries with National Geographic, saw his co-owned restaurant, The Village Den, shutter after 3 years.
Here's the problem with modern reality shows, especially reboots of things from the 2000s is everyone who's on these shows are way too media savvy. They know what this show can do for them. They all saw this as a springboard to launching their own brands, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's like they all did it after the first season.
Of course, they would have been crazy not to.
Well, I think that's why you see the varying success. Although JVN's hair products are pretty good.
Yeah, I actually have some JVN something. What is it, like a hair oil or something?
I have the air dry cream. It's quite good.
I guess all of those relentless billboards in West Hollywood just got me at a certain point.
You know what got me? It's the impulse aisle when you're waiting to buy at Sephora where I'm like, all right, I'll get a travel size air dry cream from JVN. Why not?
Yeah, I was bullied into buying the hair oil by a Sephora associate.
You have to just look at them and go, no means no.
I will not buy any more JVN hair care.
I don't care if I can get the rouge status. And no, I don't want the credit card. I know what you're trying to do.
Seriously, it's like, I don't need to be like paying off my like Sol de Janeiro boom boom cream.
Wait, is it boom boom? Or bum bum.
It's boom boom, babes. It's boom boom. Get with the times. It's weirdly against my personality type, but I am obsessed with Sol de Janeiro. I love smelling like the hottest bitch in middle school. You can't deny that it smells delicious.
Bath and Body Works is like ingrained in our cortex. And that is something that will never leave us. No matter how fancy we get, it's like, sometimes you're right, we need to smell like cucumber melon.
Yeah, but Sol de Janeiro is the couture version of Bath and Body Works. Let's not denigrate them.
Of course, I'm just saying it's a core memory for us and we try to find those scents again and again as we get older.
But see, there's no modern day equivalent to my favorite Bath and Body Works scent, which was the apple one. Like, I like the lotion that smells like a Granny Smith apple.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to get the Palmolive that's apple scented. It does smell like that.
Sorry, I have complete brand loyalty to Courtney Cox's Home Court, and I will never change. Never go back. Also, everyone check out Home Court. Not sponsored.
Although we wish so much.
I wish. If Home Court even sent us so much as a single surface cleaner, it would make my entire year.
You know what? Not to use our podcast to speak to our branding agent, but like, Jenny, actually, I know that Courtney Cox makes social media videos all the time. We will actually do a video if Courtney Cox will do it with us.
I think that sounds like a threat to Courtney Cox.
Chell, I got one question for you. Where in the world is Kate Middleton?
Oh, girl. I'm worried.
I do not care about Kate Middleton. I don't really care about the royals. But if the firm is going to fuck around in today's internet culture with a clearly fake-ass photo, not only am I, but like even Stephen Colbert, like we're going to rename the Streisand effect to the Kate Middleton effect. Because literally a week and a half ago, royalists gave a shit that Kate Middleton hadn't been seen in months. But now we're all like, And here's my theory. Like, the conspiracy theories of this are wild.
They're not that wild, though, because we've been exposed to two separate, obviously doctored photos that are meant to suggest that this woman is, like, you know, living and breathing.
I mean, the conspiracy theories have ranged from, I've heard alleged blind items that William had a mistress, the mistress is pregnant, and Kate had a full mentee bee.
This is what I don't get, is that the retouching on that photo, the amount of things they altered, that is very ambitious. That is something that calls for an Annie Leibovitz retoucher. As a novice, you're not putting a cable knit sweater on Charlotte where there is no sweater, which is why it's so baffling that the Photoshop is so bad, because to do all of those things requires a level of skill that's beyond just your average like person with Facetune.
Also because when they released the photo, so they released a photo over the weekend that had Kate Middleton and her three children that looked quite odd. And she was saying happy Mother's Day because it was Mother's Day in the UK. And it was said in the caption, or she said, whatever, that William took the photo. Then the next day, the AP and multiple photo agencies released a kill notice on the photo because they said it was clearly doctored, which was insane.
I love it.
The royals, the firm, released a statement where Kate said, I'd sometimes dabble. I myself am an amateur photographer and dabble in photo editing. Honestly, is anyone home at the castle, or are they just letting AI and ChatGPT run things?
it's just so sloppy. It's just like, I wouldn't even post this photo to my personal Instagram with confidence that people wouldn't notice the retouching. You know what I mean? And I'm like a nobody. So the fact that they just felt secure in putting this out there shows that the chain of command is like, is not correct. Someone needs to, like, that photo needs to pass through someone's eyes that can be like, no, you cannot release this.
Well, I imagine the firm is made up of decrepit people who don't understand the obsessive FBI agents in training in the form of Girls with Stanley Cups that live on TikTok.
Yeah, it's called Google Lens, babes. Like, it's not fucking hard.
Also, their follow-up photo was like, oh, here's William and Kate, and her head is fucking turned to the back so you can't see her face. What the fuck are you doing?
It's just, to me, it's crazy because all Kate Middleton has to do is just take a single video. Hey, guys, recovering from my surgery. This is fucked. Healing. Bye. Just so we know that she's alive.
I had assumed
she's getting a BBL.
That's one of the funnier conspiracy theories. No, when it was announced that she had had this abdominal surgery, I personally thought maybe she had an ectopic pregnancy, a hysterectomy, and that's why the recovery is so long or something like that. Now I'm like, is she dead?
Well, it's very plausible that that's the case, and she's just not up for being out in public, which is completely understandable, but it is just...
The first thing I said, not the dead thing.
Yes, yeah. But if that's the case, the firm needs to be better storytellers than they are being at this current moment.
For this to also occur during the 10th anniversary of the Malaysian flight disappearing is like, you know what? Reddit conspiracy theorists needed something to fixate over. So I'm happy they have this now.
Whew. Praying for you, Kate, wherever you are. Moving on, shall we talk about Paris Fashion Week?
Let's do it.
Without a doubt, the most talked about show this season was Sean McGirr's debut collection for Alexander McQueen, which was...
Oh, sorry, Chelsea. Did you not know it's just McQueen now?
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. They dropped the Alexander.
That doesn't really bother me because Alexander McQueen is no longer designing for McQueen, clearly. But for those of you who have not been so chronically online, this collection was panned by pretty much every critic and seemingly every person with a keyboard. And I'm curious to know what you thought of it, Lauren, because I think I have a more generous read than most.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I believe it was Susie Menkes who had the philosophy to never comment on a designer's first collection. But some of the things that Sean McGirr said in the show notes in the interview he gave was he had not had a chance to delve into the archives yet. He only started December 1st last year. So he took initial cues from looking at runway photos mixed with paparazzi pictures of Kate Moss and Amy Winehouse.
Okay, well, he had 3 months to design this, which seems a little unfortunate.
If you gave us the McQueen job, like, we would have a few impulses already of what to design towards. It's like, just make bumpster pants again.
Well, he certainly pulled a lot of archival references into this collection. Look, it's not my favorite show of this season by any stretch of the imagination, but call me crazy, I prefer this to the tail end of Sarah Burton's McQueen. I'm glad that he's leaning into the edgier side of McQueen as opposed to the gownier side. I thought the suiting and the more tailored stuff showed the most promise. And honestly, if you've set foot in an Alexander McQueen store recently, like, it's not well in there. If anything has been destroying the legacy of McQueen, it's like what's currently in the stores and those sneakers and stuff.
I was just about to say, as long as he doesn't continue designing sneakers with skulls on them, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, so I think in terms of legacy, I think the show is an improvement, at least in the ready-to-wear category, because I can actually imagine human beings wearing some of this stuff. Also, I was talking to my friend Zach, and he was like, imagine you grow up idolizing McQueen like every millennial age designer. You become a successful fashion designer. You get the job. You do the collection only just to be torn down by just randoms on the internet who cyberbully you and telling you you're destroying the legacy of McQueen. That must be wild. And honestly, I'm curious to know what his next collection is going to look like, because not since the Balenciaga bear debacle has a designer had to design a collection under such like horrendous circumstances.
Here's the good thing. There are now lowered expectations. The more damning thing is, are the corporate overlords going to give him a few seasons to cook? Or is this going to be like, what's his name who got tossed out of Anne de Muilemeester after one season?
I don't know. To me, it's becoming increasingly apparent that most luxury houses should just die with the designer, but it's a profit-driven industry, so obviously that's never going to happen. But it's a weird position for a designer to be in because you're simultaneously expected to do something new and push fashion forward while also basically curating the archives of another designer, which is just a strange thing that historically hasn't been part of the design process.
And McQueen is a very specific label in its story and how it's seated in a larger corporate design entity, because Tom Ford bought it when Alexander McQueen was still up and coming and really needed a cash infusion in the early 2000s and let him grow. And then he passed away, and then, you know, Tom Ford, before that, was no longer the head of what was called Gucci Group. Henri Pinault bought it, and now it is this corporate multinational juggernaut, and he's no longer at the label. And now it's just McQueen, which just, when I saw that, made me feel like the Sean Parker, Justin Timberlake scene from The Social Network. Drop the. Just Facebook. Like, drop the Lee. Just McQueen.
The best case scenario for a designer is to come into a house that it's like the name is recognizable, but no one really knows what it looks like. Like when Phoebe Philo came into Celine,
right,
or when Jonathan Anderson came into Loewe, like that's the perfect situation. This McQueen situation is a nightmare. And I think what people actually really wanted from this was more of like a Alessandro Michele type vibe than a Loewe vibe.
Sure, or like Richard Tisci when he first got to Givenchy.
Yeah, dark glamour. This was very young and there wasn't a lot of fantasy involved in it. We'll see what happens with that, but I find it interesting that this show is just so, people hated it so much. So sending prayers to Sean McGurr as well. Other things of note.
The first Chloe show with the new creative director also happened and was much better received.
People loved that show. The new creative director's name is Chimina Kamali. I don't know. I kind of thought that show was kind of whatever, but I don't think that really speaks to the designer's abilities. I think she did a good job of interpreting and distilling what Chloe is. But I think maybe at this particular moment, I'm just not ready for boho right now. You know what I mean? And I, of all people, appreciate clothing like that from the 60s and 70s, but right now it feels like a gold statement necklace worn on top of a cape with a puffy velvet headband is just feeling like a lot to me.
That's true. I'm not ready for Gen Z to figure out what Sienna Miller dressed like in the early 2000s.
But like, if anyone's the target audience for those, you know, oversized billowy chiffon dresses, it's me. And they certainly were beautiful, and some of the accessories were really beautiful. They had like these sort of hobo bags with little banana handles and little horse handles and stuff that were quite cute, I thought.
Yeah, I think this was far better received because it's exactly what people wanted from the label. Also, this designer worked under Phoebe Philo. She extensively understands the archive and wanted to reference Karl Lagerfeld's tenure there. And it also had that early 2000s Phoebe Philo energy.
Oh, yeah. The Chloe vibe was unmistakable. She knows what she's doing. There's no question of that. But I'm curious to see how this is going to evolve over time. I do think people will be wearing those big Chloe belts.
That was the most upsetting thing that I saw, which is, for those who didn't see the show, when we say large Chloe belt, it literally in script is the word Chloe.
Well, you have to figure out a way, though, to have something that's highly branded that makes sense with Chloe, which is kind of hard for a brand like that. I feel like it struck a good balance. I'm sure people will wear them. But right at this time, I'm not feeling like the whole look right now.
Guys, obviously you can't see Chelsea's face, but she looks quite stricken. You're like, I can't. Can we just like table this for a little bit?
But I'm clearly in the minority here because like everyone loved the show and everyone hated the McQueen show, except for Kathy Horn, actually. But, you know, respect to our queen.
I will say what was great at Paris Fashion Week this past week was casting, especially casting of our favorite genre of woman, which is women of a certain age.
Yeah, women of a certain age really popped off this season. We got the bootleg Kate Moss at Maureen Serre. Amazing.
Okay. I found a Page Six article about this woman, Denise Ohana, who bills herself as the world's number one Kate Moss lookalike.
I'm not going to dispute that.
I'm not going to dispute it, but also it's like, are you on Cameo? Like, what's going on? Can we hire you for my bachelorette party?
Wow. Yeah. She should be on Cameo. I would get a Cameo from her so fast.
I love that there's no answer as to why there was a Kate Moss impersonator. Like, she doesn't seem to be a model. She quite literally seems to be a Kate Moss impersonator, which I think is very funny.
It is funny. Well, it's not the first time we've seen this, because Balenciaga did have celebrity impersonators in one of their earlier shows.
Right.
I forget. There was like a fake Angelina Jolie or something like that. More impersonators. I love the impersonators. We got Marsha Cross at Vetmont. The bootleg Isabelle Huppert.
The brothers are beefing. They're like, you have a redheaded woman of a certain age in film and television? Guess what?
As someone that loves Balenciaga, I've been trying to articulate what about Vetmont does not land for me. And I think I've realized what it is. And I think it's because it looks like if you forced Victor and Rolf to design a collection in the style of Balenciaga,
right,
this is what it would look like. Because right, everything's a little like too over the top to the point of it being unwearable. References are a little too on the nose and obvious. I don't really fuck with it.
Why Marsha Cross? Why now? Like, look.
Literally, why?
Did they grow up watching Melrose Place?
Maybe we just don't know enough about Marsha Cross. I recently learned that Marsha Cross has been posting a lot of pro-Palestine stuff on social media. I was like, interesting, Marsha Cross. Marsha Cross contains multitudes. We need to investigate her further.
Well, if you've seen her role as Kimberly Shaw in Melrose Place, you would understand she contains multitudes. All right, who else was on the runway?
We got women of a certain age at Mugler. We got Farida. We got Connie Fleming. We got a bunch of women of a certain age at Balmain also, although I don't know who they were. They weren't like famous.
I believe also in the Miu Miu collection, in addition to Kristen Scott Thomas, was just one of their VIP clients, like a 70-year-old woman who is one of
the doctor. Yeah, she's amazing. I forget her name, but I follow her on Instagram. She's just like the most incredible Prada and Miu Miu collector, and like turns out these incredible looks. Very cool. I hope that women of a certain age on the runway isn't just a trend. I hope that it's here to stay, but we know that's not going to happen. We know that because of the body diversity situation that has been unfolding on the runways. And it seems like we're witnessing the last gasp of that. So I can't imagine that there will be any real long-term change. But I do think that it's very cool to see these clothes on older women.
Yeah, they're going to bring this out every few seasons as a stunt.
In Jen, like, what shows did you like?
I didn't hate the Chanel show.
How generous of you.
I was quite taken to the commitment to the big hat.
I loved the big hat.
It was like, hey, would Chanel be better with giant hats? And the answer is maybe.
The answer is 1,000% it's better with giant hats. One thing about Chanel is like the proportions of everything are so predictable that like anything that subverts that ever so slightly is going to have a real impact. And those hats, I mean, that was more than slightly. Those were giant hats. Wow, were they great.
So I'm interested if that is going to translate into stores, because I would love to see influencers with way too much money in Erewhon, which is a giant Chanel hat.
Yeah, is Kristen Stewart going to attempt that giant hat and pull some weird, like, taxi driver jailbait look or something?
I love how she's rebelling in her own way against that Chanel blood oath, where it's like, guess what? I'm going to wear nothing.
No, but it's still Chanel.
No, I know it's Chanel, but it's like I'm wearing hot pants and visible garters and the Chanel jacket.
I know I should be into it. And I feel like the general public response to the Love Lies Bleeding press tour is like, yes, queen, like slay. I think these looks are so contrived. There's nothing about them that looks natural. Like, Hailey Bieber can step out onto the street wearing a giant blazer and, you know, some little strappy sandals, and we can believe that she just threw that on, possibly.
Even though a stylist had constructed this weeks before.
This looks like so much effort was put in, because it's like the knee socks match the little shorts, yeah, that match the little jacket, that match the little bag, and it feels so like done and unnatural, which to me is sort of the opposite of who Kristen Stewart is. She is someone that feels very sort of authentic, and it's not landing for me.
But that's the intense dichotomy of her being a Chanel brand ambassador for so long.
Also, I want to point out something that I think is a little hypocritical, but are Kristen Stewart's outfits really that different from some of the stuff that Bianca Censori has been wearing?
Fair.
Which people find to be so vulgar and tasteless. But I think that more speaks to her body type and how people respond to different kinds of bodies, you know, that have their ass out.
Oh, I said Chanel. What's a favorite show of yours?
I loved Lueve. Very good show for them. Love the Radish Prince. Love that one dress that looked like a medieval tapestry of a Brussels griffin that had like the most insane couture level beadwork.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Anderson has honed in on who the Lueve woman is, what that look is, and the look is like hot gallerist with, you know, wide cutouts and a dress and a giant belt.
Yeah, would have loved to see more of the belt stuff at the Oscars. Also, have to respect Rick Owens. I mean, I'll never fully relate to his worldview because I'm just not that goth, but I have to respect a man who is at the top of his game, as he clearly is. And you could never mistake this show for another designer, which is very, very rare. So kudos to Rick.
Well, again, I ask, which one of us is getting the balloon boots?
I just want to try them on. I mean, I guess they should be at the store at some point. Maybe we could try.
I mean, he is goth. I do have a few of his jackets, but in recent years, he has played with colors in unexpected ways. And this season for me, it was like the combo of the seafoam green knitted jumpsuit, unitard.
Who the fuck knows what these clothes actually are?
With the oxblood red balloon boots. I was like, you know what? I could get into that. I mean, I actually technically could not probably physically get into it. It feels like several people need to help you to get into those boots.
It is weird that at this point there are so few quote unquote anti-establishment designers in Paris. There's Rick, but like Rick is like in his 60s at this point. You know, it's weird that there's not so much of that next generation of sort of more of edgier talents.
They need funding.
Yeah. And what else was good? I mean, Miu Miu. Weirdly, Miu Miu has become more exciting than Prada. I don't know how that happened, but good for them. I'm so glad that they moved beyond the sort of jewel-encrusted dolly bird look that they did for so many years. It's very satisfying. And it's nice to see older women wearing Miu Miu. Like, diversifying the runway has been good for them between the men's stuff, the older women. I feel like it's all positive because usually when you look at their shows, it's like, okay, that's for Gem Award type bitches.
Yeah, I think lovely clothes, very wearable clothes. Imagine that.
Great separates, beautiful separates.
That's about it. Award season done. Fashion month done. What the hell are we going to talk about now?
I'm sure there will be things. And we will talk about those things next week.
All right, this is the most that I've talked in like 2 weeks, and I'm about to go and have a coughing fit, but we'll be back next week.
Or will we? We'll see.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Bye.